Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of our discussion of the offense in that Raiders game. Obviously, not the result Ravens fans wanted. We're going to talk about some of the results the Ravens fans really didn't want in the second episode when we talk about the offensive line. Joining me to do that, of course, is Jeremy Kahn. Jeremy, how you doing?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure, my friend. And Jeremy's got a lot of interesting things going on in life. Concrete Locks, his website, one that I think you ought to visit and give a chance to. Just a very interesting guy and a nice guy to talk Baltimore sports with. Got a interesting outlook on the world with his shovels he gives out and the World of Stupid on the morning show. And if there's a guy who can find irony in a moment, Jeremy is it, and a very funny guy to appreciate having you on.
Yeah, we had something. I'm doing the show with Ryan Ripken, and we had something where we were interviewing Mike Bordick, and he was getting ready to, we're ending the segment. And I said, Bordy, I mean, you got high praise over here. Ryan said, you're the best shortstop he's ever seen. And then everybody kind of freezes, and then we all start laughing. And Ryan, he took it and ran with it. He goes, yeah, you're the best I've ever seen. And then they got into it about dad, and he called him Calvin, which was great. So, I like to have fun. I like to learn just as much as anybody else. I think being an informative or entertaining are the two things that really stand out to people when they're listening. Try to be both. Sometimes I'm not.
Well, I think more often than not, you hit the mark there. But point to the first show and some things we talked about, some interesting things about Deshaun Watson's contract. We dug into a little bit of background on who Mike Florio is. That, you know, he's a lawyer by training, and some of the reasons why he may be a guy who knows what's going on with it, with that contract. We talked about the Ravens scheme a fair amount, the use of Henry and Hill. Is Henry being on the field a flag that he's getting the ball, or certainly is a much higher percentage of the time he gets it? We talked about the Ravens commitment of eligible receivers to the passing game, which was one of the big things that probably dragged them down a little bit in this game. Talked about Lamar Jackson and what he did. Go back and take a listen to that first spot. You don't want to miss that. And lots of fun from Jeremy. A lot of talk about gambling. And the big surprising thing we just found out right before we recorded is the Ravens are still a very slight favorite to win the AFC North at this exact moment.
Yeah, sometimes the math doesn't math for you if you're when you're looking at it going, huh, they're 0-2, but and then there it's a pick'em game coming up this weekend with the Cowboys. But again, you haven't played any divisional games. And I think until you play those, you still have an excellent shot to win your division.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Moving on here. I guess we'll jump in and talk about the offensive line.
Well, this is where I got to put on my interviewer's hat, because the one thing I say to people, you can ask me anything in sports. You want to talk about baseball, I'll break it down. You want to talk about all the skill positions in football, basketball, sets, whatever. I do not know how to grade offensive line. Now, I know when they're doing bad. That's one thing. But, you know, this is something where I really appreciate when we get to talk to you, and I'm always intrigued your take on the offensive line. So can I just start this off and jump in it?
Absolutely.
All right, so we were looking at a couple different things. They had two sacks allowed, another quarterback hit, two holding penalties, and a fair amount of pressures, but they also missed more blocks than last week. What were you seeing with them off the bat with some of those things?
Yeah, so I usually summarize that stuff to just say there's a lot of negative points to be allocated. But the big difference from this week to last week was they also missed a lot more blocks. And so players like Fa'alele, who were doing a pretty good job of getting in the way, missed more blocks this week. Had, frankly, a bad game from Linderbaum in terms of missed blocks as well. I thought they did actually a fairly decent job of providing ample time and space.
Happens sometimes. Okay.
Live.
Yes, all right. We're live on Saturday night here. Yeah. But they also deliver that ATS with a very heavy eligible receiver commitment. And that's 0.88 per play. Now let's break this down a little bit. You get five eligible receivers per play, not including the quarterback. Okay. Quarterback's actually eligible too, but you have, if you use 0.88 of those per play, you're down to 4.12 eligible receivers per play. That is a not insignificant reduction in how you can threaten the opponent in terms of guarding the field. And it means that they can usually have an easier time doing it with their back seven or back six, whatever it might be. And the Raiders, with a four-man rush, really had a back seven for most of the game. They did have a spy a fair amount. So they had a back seven, though, most of the time. Back six or back seven, most of the time that they were allocating to fewer than five receivers. So it really did give them an advantage in terms of trying to cover the field.
Now, let me ask you this before we go like grade by grade and left to right on the line. You mentioned it's something we talked about quite a bit in the first podcast, the four-man rush. Mm-hmm. Now, seeing a four-man rush, does that affect how you grade them, knowing that they weren't under as much duress, or what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it does affect grading some, I suppose, because if you get double teams, then you have a better chance to succeed in those blocks as pass blockers. And if you get help from chip blockers, generally speaking, that will improve your chances. Of course, an outside rusher who's lining up from a wide nine technique or very wide to the line of scrimmage may get a tight end, or a guy who lines up on the tight end's outside shoulder may get a tight end as the blocker, which also impacts the chance of the quarterback getting a good thing. But in terms of how it affects the grades, I think the answer you're looking for is probably they still have to make their block, and that's what's important. They just may have a slightly higher chance of doing it with only four rushing.
Let's talk about Ronnie Stanley then a little bit, because I think when we talked about the Ravens starting off 0-3, they haven't done it since the year before they drafted Ronnie Stanley, when they had a really down year and won five games. Mm-hmm. Lots of high hopes for him, injuries, some of the things that have happened coming into this year. A lot of people had questions. What did you see from Ronnie Stanley against the Raiders?
So, you know, in qualitatively, he's much more mobile than he was at any time since before the ankle injury in 2020. So that's, we're going back a long time now. It's been really 4 years since he's played at this level in terms of mobility. He's getting out into level two. He's getting way downfield. One of the Ronnie Stanley trademarks was that he was able to make blocks even on the backside of run plays by moving downfield and catching a cornerback sometimes or a safety who's far off the line of scrimmage. And that was just very effective. Linderbaum has that reputation now, and you know, it's well-deserved and whatnot, but Ronnie is very unusual for a tackle to be able to do that. And so that was something that really made him special. In this play, I'll just go through what happened here, because a lot of it came down to an offensive holding penalty, but he had 61 plays, made 54 of his blocks. He missed four, allowed 1.5 pressures. So that's a 3-point deduction there. And then his big deduction was that offensive holding penalty. It was a weird penalty, a straight ahead block. There was no call for a holding from his opponent. So it was an odd situation that way. And it made all the difference in his grade. He ended up being a 0.79, including the holding penalty, which is a C+ at offensive tackle. But if he had not had that holding penalty called, which I think is probably improperly, he would have had an A. So it's a big difference. And I am often asked, by the way, if it's too much of a weight on the holding penalties. But the fact of the matter is, penalties are a one-player concentrated ball of negativeness, whereas the if you have an offsetting play that is exactly equivalent in magnitude but of opposite sign in terms of its value. So I'm just going notionally here. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of players who contribute to that, but when you have a negative play that's determined by penalty, it's one guy and he has to take all the negative for that. So I'm very confident in my weightings on penalties right now, and it's something where you know, PFF sees it very differently from this. And I was saying that, I'm very confident. I just realized I've given an additional negative point to Stanley, so I've got to fix that in the article tonight. So he probably ends up with a B anyway through this game, or either a B or a B minus with one additional point.
Yeah, I like what you said there, though, because like when you look at some of the offensive linemen and specifically penalties, the one that we notice most is holding, and that's a 10-yard mm-hmm. penalty. Depending on when it happens, it could happen during a gigantic run, which then puts you even more behind the sticks. But to me, they're drive killers a lot of times. There are sometimes you're going to get past it. But even going back to week one, all those false starts, like you're resetting. You just showed them the play you wanted to run. You're resetting now. And it's not even false starts. They were neutral zone infractions, which even worse in my opinion.
The illegal formation we talk about, the crusade they went on. Yes. All I can say is very fortunate that the Ravens ended up scoring on that drive, because it would have been a big black mark for the NFL had they not. And even so, I don't, there's no part of it that I like. There's no part of it that I think is good football or good TV. I hated every part of it. The other part about post-snap fouls and illegal formation, even though it's a pre-snap foul, falls into this case because it is declinable, is that those option penalties have a much higher value for the defense. Yeah, it's not just taking the penalty when there's a 9-yard run, as there was in this game. It's declining the penalty when you get a sack or you get an interception anyway. That has option value to it. So you know, people will often look at false starts and illegal downfield in the passing game. They're not equivalent penalties. I mean, a false start's much less severe. Yeah,
absolutely. And the same thing that you're talking about with those penalties, you know, how you have the advantage when somebody jumps offside and they're like, hey, throw the ball deep, see what you can get. Maybe you get a pass interference call. Maybe they catch it. Even if they pick it off, we're just going to take the penalty. Conversely speaking, when you have the illegal formation, now nothing good can come of it. You're going to go back 5 yards regardless of what happens, unless
at
it's
best.
Offsetting.
At best. Yeah. You can get sacked, and then they take the sack. So, yeah.
See, and that's the thing. Keeping with the offensive line here, because I thought Voorhees played well in week one, right? What did you see in week two from him?
Yeah, he played pretty well in week one. He looks pretty good technically. So I'd start off with a positive, and that's of telling somebody three nice things before you break up with them. did not have a game otherwise that was particularly good. He allowed one penetration on a run play, two pressures, and he was also flagged for holding. And of course, that's a significant deduction. And he ended up with a D. And I don't think that's going to change, but I'm looking at it again. But he gets an extra point, too, because I miscounted this on here. Three blocks in level two, one pancake. he actually, his pull was where he allowed the penetration because he was too slow to get across and block Crosby. It was a big ask, by the way, but it's still, it's a miss on his part. So you get minus 1 point on two pulls, and then he had three highlight blocks, which is nice. So, there are things you can pull out of his game that you can say, I think he might come around, but there wasn't anything about this game that was particularly good. His first game was pretty good in that regard. This game just, it wasn't nearly as good. A D, well, by the way, for him.
Yeah. I'm assuming when we get to Linderbaum here, like you start talking about, he's probably the most consistent on this offensive line. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, he definitely is the Ravens. He and Stanley are the Ravens' most consistent linemen. He had a tough game this week, and it was more reminiscent of some of the problems he had as a rookie against bigger men directly in front of him. In this game, he got a lot of Christian Wilkins. Christian Wilkins is one of the better interior defenders in the National Football League. He's a very big player. And it ended up that Linderbaum had 8 missed blocks in the game, and 5 of those were losses at the line of scrimmage. So I divided into those two categories because it's not as serious to get into level 2 and not be able to find anybody as it is to lose the man directly across from you and have him bifurcating the backfield on a run play, potentially getting Lamar to release the ball quickly, whatever it might be. He did allow 1 pressure as well. Worked out to a B- game for him, which frankly I think is better certainly than PFF had him scored in for this game, but it clearly wasn't his best game. And I don't think the Ravens are at a point right now where they can accept B- play from Linderbaum. They need him to be a little bit better than that, and really approach Pro Bowl status at the very least. Creed Humphrey may be the guy who wins it in the AFC for years to come, but he needs to be close each year for that to be really considered good, I think.
Well, I might be getting a little ahead of myself, but I'm assuming that the next guy got an F because you couldn't give him a G. Falele, it was a rough day for him on Sunday.
See, it's great to be on the show just for that. Yeah. Falele, in the first game, he really looked oafish, which has pretty much been a consistent. He's very consistent in that regard of his look is not good. But he was much less results. The results were much less positive in week 2. Missed a lot of blocks, 10, in fact, out of 61, and also had 2.25 pressures. So that was a big hit, and then a sack. And the sack, obviously, Max Crosby coming through and getting Lamar for the loss of 9 late. Not a good look, just a tough game for him. Only 1 block in level 2 for him. That's an area where he's just not very good at being out in space. He's a decent seal guy. So if you run through his hole on the right side, he's a guy who can come up and hit the scraping linebacker. If he would really use his hands better, he could get to a better point in terms of torquing that player across from him. But he still has not really figured that out. And so a lot of his size, he just plays a lot smaller than he is. He's a 370-pound man or thereabouts, and he plays like he's 310 because he really doesn't use his arms very well. And that's unfortunate. So anyway, an F for him. It wasn't quite as bad as you're making it. There are complete fall off the table Fs. At guard, he's got to get a 0.67 to pass. His score is actually 0.62. So we have seen some games of that nature from James Hurst at tackle, from O'Neal Cousins coined the term Cousinsian when you'd have a really fall off the table. And then we had some worse games even than that in the Hurst era. You'll see worse happen, but it wasn't a good game for Fall lately.
Before we get the right tackle, like there was a lot of talk about why not Ben Cleveland. And it seems like the Ravens wanted to go with Falele. And I don't know if it's that we've seen the best of Ben Cleveland, or at least they believe we know what his ceiling is. We don't know what Falele's is. It's not looking good right now, but again, I think it can't get better. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't really know why they have said no to Ben Cleveland. I was predicting the entire offseason that this was a kind of a psychological game that they were playing to motivate Ben Cleveland by putting Falele in at the beginning at right guard from the OTAs. And the reason I thought that is because they did that with Simpson last year. They put in Salah to be the starting left guard. They installed him at the beginning of OTAs. He stays there into camp, into the first preseason game, plays as badly as you can possibly play in the preseason last year. And they put Simpson out there starting the second week of practice, the week of practice after that first preseason game as the starter. But in his case, he was coming from a bad situation, tons of excuses that he made about his time in Las Vegas. Tons of penalties. He had something really to get over there. And I thought that the Ravens, you know, did a good job of motivationally handling it. With Falele, I get the impression that he was really a golden child of D'Alessandris because he had a great work ethic. He's, you know, at the facility early, always ready to lift, always wants to learn, always doing the right things where Ben Cleveland probably is not. And, you know, passing the conditioning test when he has to. And that, you know, when I see D'Alessandris get upset with Falele, as he did one day this preseason, this camp, I see, you know, that's a guy getting mad at his son. You know, he's furious at him, but he still loves him and he wants him to be good. It's for the right reasons that he's doing that. So, you know, I wonder whether or not, you know, Falele is really the choice of D'Alessandris. Obviously, that can't hold as results continue to play out as they have, you know, so far. I think at some point they're going to have to make that change.
Can I tell you some of the things I've heard about Ben Cleveland? And again, this is, I mean, there are people in the know that are saying this, that there was some thought that he's not, for lack of a better term, in love with football. He looks at it more as a job. And then there are some people that believe when he hangs up his cleats that he may never watch another football game again or be a part of one, that you're just going to find him out in his tree stand hunting whatever's running around in the woods back there, because I think that's something he loves to do. And I'm not saying there's nothing wrong with someone that doesn't have that love for the game. It's just weird when you've played a game or when you've been an athlete, like, man, I love doing this. I can't believe you don't love coming to work. And maybe all this is for naught and it's not true, but there are some people that know him that I'm friends with that say, yeah, that's kind of who he is.
I wish I could say that wasn't true, but I think I've heard the same things, is that his love for the game is not, you know, what people would have hoped for. And that is one of the things. Why are they not able to ferret this out in the interview process? How can somebody who's, you know, by all occurrences, a fairly simple man, okay, likes to stay in a cabin and go out and hunt squirrels. You just alluded to this. I mean, you know, he's not going to be somebody who's going to devise this complex plot about, I love the game. There's nothing I'd rather do than being on a field goal. It's the, you know, the smell of the grass and this. I mean, he's just not going to fool you that way. I don't believe it.
The other thing is, people that love the game, it's like you talked about Falele putting in the work ethic because you want to get better and you're practicing consistently. I think it should have been a red flag coming out of Georgia that he didn't have a traffic violation. So that's the going thing now. If you come out of Georgia, you got to have something, speeding, whatever. But yeah, I mean, look, nobody really knows and how this thing's going to end. But if Falele keeps playing the way he has been, they're going to have to make some tweaks, which is why where I get to right tackle. And let me tie in Mekari and Rosengarten, because is there any way that you see them kind of Rosengarten taking over and putting Mekari somewhere else? Or what are your thoughts on how those two guys look? Because we got to see both of them.
Right. So I'm not sure it really makes sense to put Mekari at guard. So I think if Mekari is taken out of the right tackle rotation, which I think is a possibility because he hasn't played well in two games now, then there's he probably ends up being the backup center and backup tackle. And you use him like that. And by the way, that's a fine use of a player who you think can be adequate enough to play backup left tackle, backup right tackle, maybe if needed again later in the year. But he's faced two tough opponents, and he hasn't looked good in either game. His length has come into play in these games, which has been kind of a thing that snagged him his whole career, is that he's got shorter arms than most offensive tackles. And when he faces bigger, longer guys, like Crosby or like Jones in week one, who they basically said, we're taking advantage of you. We're lining up Jones every play here, even though Jones has, you know, made his hay as an interior defensive lineman who occasionally plays on the edge. He played pretty much exclusively on the edge against the Ravens. So it hasn't been great, but get in his grading, which is what we're really talking about. He played 44 snaps, made 35 blocks, missed 5 of them, 2.25 pressures and a sack. So same as Falele had, but in many fewer snaps. That's a lot worse. But he didn't miss as many blocks. He still ended up with 25.5 points, 0.58 per play. And then at tackle, the grading curve is a lot more lenient than at guard, because you allow more pressure events there. So he ended up with a D, right in the middle of the D range. He got an F in the first game. He was about 5 points short of passing that week. So it's not what you want, but on the other hand, it was not a complete fall off the table result either. Nothing really positive to say about him in this game. He had one block in level two. He missed his only pole. So he didn't have any highlights, didn't pancake anyone. It's not anything that I can point to other than his pass blocking, is just not up to the standard at the position.
With the short arms thing, is that about getting to the defender first and being able to keep him at bay? Because it's usually, the hand fighting, whoever gets there first is the one that's going to have the advantage.
Yeah, initiating first contact is enormous. And the guys who have enormous 35-inch arms, when they use them well, and Falele has them and doesn't use them, but when they use them well, you know, can often get right to the armpit or the chest plate and gain control of rep is over once that player is locked on. Now, defenders have counters to that.
Yeah.
So it's long arms are not an automatic. It's a kind of a necessary but not sufficient thing. Of course, when you're the defender, then you're also trying to do the opposite thing. Is you're trying to use one arm longer than two, usually against your opponent, and put your hand on the middle of the chest plate. So when you'll see, what you'll often see is you don't even really notice, and I noticed this in the draft a lot with looking at Leatu Latu, who's one of the top guys in the draft this year. You don't even really notice the defender's hands. What you notice is the guy opposite him flailing like hell, trying to get his hands on the guy, not being able to do it because he's one arm longer than two and he's just otherwise too quick. So that's been a problem for McCary.
Did you say flailing like hell? Is that what you said?
Yeah, there you go.
with Rosengarten, though, can we slide over to him? Because I know you don't necessarily have a grade, right, because he didn't play enough snaps. Is that fair? But what did you see from him? Okay.
Yeah, I thought he played really well. He was one of the bright spot on the line by far. Made 15 of his 17 blocks, two misses as I scored it. It's 0.88 per play. That would be an A if it were three more snaps and he had maintained that same rate. It's a very good data point. He also didn't play 20 snaps, by the way, in the first game. I think he played 19 then, so he hasn't got a grade yet. But he played very poorly in the first game in terms of his numeric score. So, this was a good data point. It was a step forward. It was nice to see him play better. And I think there's a real possibility they'll go to more of Rosengarten from now on.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, because looking at the shuffling of the offensive line and how it ends up looking with our talks about McCary and of course, Ben Cleveland. But they've got some young guys. Voorhees was one of those guys that we just talked about in Rosengarten that you're kind of excited, but it leads fans back to the point of, hey, you let three offensive linemen walk, and did you really replace them? Or you let three offensive linemen leave. It's a little frustrating. And the one thing I do agree with you on specifically is you talked about they do have a way to get better. You know, like there's time here. That's all you have.
I want to go back to what you said, because I think it's a really key point, is that they had to let three offensive linemen go. The Ravens really didn't have an option here. I mean, they're paying the piper for signing Odell Beckham this year, and even I think a little bit into next year as well. But they're paying the piper for signing Odell Beckham, and they just didn't have a lot of cap space. Next year, they're going to have even less cap space, by the way. They've got some cuts to make. To make sure that they get to the point. It's not going to be a season where you have a bunch of cornerstone players that they sign. Ravens fans are going to be very frustrated. And there's nothing more frustrating to an analyst or a guy who has a Friday morning GM show or does any of these kind of things than people who don't understand the cap and don't want to be bothered with it. And then, all they do is say, I don't care. You know, Lamar's on his first contract or Lamar's on his second contract. He's in the early years. This is our last chance. This is our window. Spend, spend, spend. I don't want to hear it as an analyst, and I really don't want to hear it as a season ticket holder. I don't want somebody who's going to watch the games on TV and has the ability to turn them off whenever they feel like it, basically saying that 2026 or 2027 season is going to be a crappy season. You live through it because we got to take our shot at it now.
I was going to say, I'll tell you one, like we get a lot of that with people. Anytime a wide receiver became available and people knew his name, like sign him. Sign it. Like there's six of them out. You want them to sign all of them? Like none of these guys can even play. Like even Odell Beckham, when everybody was clamoring for him last year, I'm like, you guys know you're getting the ghost of Odell Beckham, right?
Yeah.
And even look at him in Miami now. He hasn't even played in Miami. But it's funny though. I was just thinking about the Ravens a little bit fortunate because you get Chris Jones in week one and then you get Max.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
This time of year, a good hoodie is absolutely essential. And the American Giant Classic Full Zip Hoodie is made to last a lifetime. With timeless style, heavyweight fleece, and durable details, you can depend on it for years to come. Snag the hoodie that will bring you comfort for life, the American Giant Classic Full Zip, and save 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com when you use code CLASSIC24 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com. Code CLASSIC24.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tap. Also, on them.
Service plan required for watch or tap. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Crosby in week two. Thank God the Dallas Cowboys don't have a premier pass rusher.
Yeah.
See how they handle Micah Parsons this week. That should be a fun watch.
Yeah, it's a great point, but there's nothing like an aging skill position player who has name recognition from 5 years ago to get a fan base riled up for a signing. Come on, do something, Ravens.
Well, it's like when the Steelers signed Allen Robinson, everybody's like, yeah, we got it. I said, did you guys watch him last year? He can't get open. So it's sometimes you get the ghost of these players. And look, I know running backs hit the wall hard, but receivers, sometimes you just see the injuries start to pick up, nagging injuries. Now they're trying to play through it. And I think that's what, like Keenan Allen in Chicago, I think that's what you're going to get from him this year, as much as I love that guy.
Well, the Ravens brought in two guys this summer for camp. And Anthony Miller had surprisingly more athleticism than I expect. And Russell Gage, I always call him, want to call him Justin Gage, but Russell Gage didn't look like much at all. Yeah. And he got hurt. But basically, those two guys they're signing are two pieces of spaghetti you're picking out of the pot and throwing against the refrigerator. If it sticks, it's probably because somebody on your top five or top six guys got hurt. It's not going to be because these guys are great. They both missed the last season. In fact, I think Miller's had Kirkwood was a third one, but Miller might have missed two seasons and Gage missed one. And yes, they had fairly prolific statistics in the NFC South, you know, a few years ago.
But yeah,
I don't understand the excitement of these guys.
Well, people fall in love with names. You know how it is. Like, I know that guy, so they should sign him. I remember telling people about, especially in the draft, one of my favorite draft stories is when the Steelers drafted Troy Polamalu, and there were some Ravens fans laughing, like, look what they got. They got themselves a treasure troll, and look at that. He's not going to do anything. And I said, did you guys watch this cat play in college? He is a fierce beast. Yeah, he's soft-spoken, but, man, he can hit. And, you know, sometimes, like, it's not always about – sometimes you got to trust your front office that they know what they're doing. And I don't think people realize how much the NFL or football is chess and not checkers. Yeah. The way that, like, it's not like, hey, we need a starting pitcher, let's go sign one. It's like, hey, we need an offensive lineman. All right, where are we getting it from? Do we draft it and develop it? Is there somebody off the scrap heap we can pay? You know.
Yeah, and the most important question that a general manager really has to answer in the offseason is not where do I find a player who might be good, because there are guys who you can pay for and that are good. It's where am I not going to spend and still meet the cap? The cap is the ultimate master. You have to fall in line with it. And if you don't, then you won't have money next year because you'll spend future dollars and you will eventually pay the player. So pay the piper.
Yeah. Well, you wind up like Denver this year with all that dead Russell Wilson money from making a bad signing, or you wind up Cleveland hoping that you can eventually get to some of that dead money or get it off the books if you could, because it's such a bad signing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's move on. We want to talk a little bit about some other positions. Since we talked about the offensive line, we talked about Lamar. We're talking about other skill position players on offense. Who would you like to talk about?
I want to bring up Bateman because we're two games in. And it's funny because, like, I feel like he's been a big talking point on our show from some fans that just don't see it. I think the Ravens and Bateman both got themselves a deal with All Things Considered and how it went. But I think there's talent there. I don't know that he's a match for Lamar's skill set, because to me, he's one of those guys that you got to throw it when he hits his break. When he cuts, you got to throw it before he's open. And I don't know that's Lamar's strong suit.
Yeah, I mean, that's you've nailed it on the head. Is that his any kind of separation metric you see with Bateman is going to be of greatest value coming out of that break. And then because he's usually coming back to the quarterback, or often is coming back to the quarterback when he makes that break, it's going to wane in the second or so after that's done. And so that's why you can see these divergent metrics of Bateman has great separation characteristics and Bateman has not particularly good separation characteristics, because you can measure it at different times along the play. So anyway, I know there's been stuff posted on both ends, but Lamar, if he wants to make use of Bateman and Monken, frankly, if they want to figure out how to make use of Bateman, has got to make Lamar more of an on-schedule thrower. It doesn't mean every play that he can't play backyard football at all, that you change him into Peyton Manning in his late career. I wouldn't want that either. But I want to see 4 to 6 on-schedule throws per game where he can take advantage of who Bateman is and some of his explosiveness after the catch, because you got a great route runner who's frankly being wasted. And I'll give you one more thing. This week, the trust factor did not go up by the fact that ball went into Bateman's hands.
Yeah.
It actually might have hit the outside of Bateman's hands, and then it got intercepted, because we've seen that song before. We've heard that song before.
Well, the other thing I wondered too about, and look, I played wide receiver. I didn't play in the NFL, but I love this position. I love watching the way the guys run routes. And you're right about Bateman. It's a beautiful thing to watch him run. But the thing I do know about receivers is if you're not getting the ball, sometimes you get complacent. Sometimes you're not running your routes to your fullest ability. Sometimes you're not out there blocking either. But the one thing I'll say about Bateman, at least through the first two games, he was blocking his tail off. So I liked seeing that. I don't know how good the blocks were if you were grading them, Ken, but I know he was out there working his tail off. And he's one of those guys that, like, I'd like to see him get some underneath stuff. He has incredible explosive ability to get down the field, but I don't know if that's in his repertoire, but I would assume you could drag him across the field and dump one off to him.
Yeah, it certainly can. I mean, that's part of it. You could get him in more pick and rub routes to try to do this. Now, that doesn't really make use of his route running in the same way, but he's still got to manipulate space against an opponent. And would be well suited to do it, as are any number of receivers, frankly. But it's something that it affects not only these short breaking passes, it affects the long passes. I mean, I can't help but think that Lamar doesn't really trust Bateman to defend against the interception on longer passes, and that's some of the reason for the overthrows we've seen. It's just been he did overthrow Andrews in this last game, so you know that was a less common thing that we've seen. Most of the time puts the ball right up where Andrews is or where Andrews is going to be, and trust Andrews to go up and make the catch, because Andrews will fight and try and rip that football away. I think he has the same trust for Aguilar. I don't think he has it at all for Bateman.
Yeah, it's one of those weird things too, where I'm like, taking shots downfield, even when they're incomplete, I feel like it needs to happen. And I understand with a team that doesn't want to be behind the sticks, you got to have them respect you deep, even if you're not completing those passes. So I like them taking some shots throughout the game. It all can't be, 3.5 yards in a cloud of dust and move the chains, it doesn't always work that way. That I think you have a chance to break some intermediate stuff that can go longer with Yak or even beat them down the field if they're not respecting the deep ball.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And it's you need to show everything in order for them to do that. And that's why receivers in general need to have a complementary set of routes. And Bateman has it. Bateman can go deep and he can run you a great comeback. And that's really all you need. It's great if guys can run the entire 1-9 tree, 0-9 tree. But it's more important that you be able to do two things that complement each other well, because they force the cornerback to make a bad decision at the top of the stem. And when you have that, and Bateman does, you got to take advantage of the timing or people won't respect the deep route anymore. They'll sit on that more because they know Lamar won't, come down to try and hit Bateman. So anyway, frustrating.
It's funny you say, like, just to speak on route running and how much I watch, like, DK Metcalf makes me want to throw up when I watch him run routes. He's just so big, physical, and fast that he gets away with rounding these routes off. If he would just run the route the right way, he'd be so wide open because he's so talented. But you do see some guys that run lazy routes. And going back to Bateman, one of his best plays, wasn't that the slant that he took to the house when he had the highest, speed towards the end zone? I think there should be ways to get him involved other than trying to chuck it up down the field.
Hey, it's just, again, a matter of getting Lamar, get a set of plays in there. And it probably would show up in scripted plays when they do it, because it's the kind of thing that if you have it in the playbook and you call it during a game in the third quarter when you're not in a scripted portion of plays, Lamar may just do whatever he wants anyway and not hit the first read because he wants to play, I'll call it post-flop poker against a weak, against opponents. Yeah. That's where he has a big advantage. And there's sometimes when you just want to play pre-flop and press your advantage there. And anyway.
I got you.
Okay. All right. Let me talk about the usage of Patrick Ricard, because we did a little bit in the first show talk about the limited use of heavies. They only played Patrick Ricard 28% of the time. Part of the Raiders' DNA defensively is that they have great tacklers at the line of scrimmage and they have crappy tacklers in level 2 and 3. Really, really bad tacklers. And specifically, Divine Diablo is terrible. And they're, generally speaking, their corners and safeties, very few teams have really good tacklers back there. But it would have been a great opportunity to get opportunities for Henry to get into level 2 more. Henry in this game, he had a pretty good game, so he did get some of that and he extended some runs, but they didn't really make good use of Ricard at the point of attack. And I wonder if the Ravens are going to move to a different philosophy and go to more pistol, maybe, to get Henry running straight ahead, and that would make Lamar more of an edge threat as a runner if they do that.
Yeah, interesting enough, though, too. Like, I wonder about the way that this league is going. Are we going to see fullbacks and some of these H-backs go to the wayside? And I mean, there's still teams that like to use them, especially in those goal line scenarios. And you look at some of the guys that are really good pass catchers out of the backfield are the ones that typically you can block, you can catch, they'll find a use for you. And I think it's not something that I think needs to go away by any stretch, because if some of the better offensive minds like, Kyle Shanahan and some of the other guys have a fullback in their system, I'd like to think there's a good reason to have him there, that you can do so many different things with him. But it was interesting to me when you brought up how many plays he ran on Sunday, because I wasn't tracking it, honestly, to look at it. But I don't know. Like, that's a guy that I know the fan base loves him, but he's such a versatile player. He can do so many different things. He's a freak of nature. And now teams are emulating what the Ravens did. Who was it that picked up?
The Chargers, right? Have a fullback. Again. That's a defensive lineman. Yeah. It's very Romanesque. I mean, it was bound to happen. And every year I kind of think that it might be the year where they try and replace Ricard with a newer, cheaper version of him that will be different. It's gotten to be very hard, but he's at the end of his contract. This might be Ricard's last year in Baltimore.
Yeah. A fun guy. I don't know if you've met him and talked to him. Great guy. But he's a lot of fun to watch play.
All right. Who do you got up next?
Yeah. So I wanted to bring up, you know, we were kind of talking about the different pass catchers, and this week it was something interesting with the fact that Likely being on the field the same time with Andrews and seeing how much we could see there. I love that Andrews stepped forward, but I fully expected that after being bracketed last weekend and what Isaiah Likely showed. But getting him the ball, and again, we've talked about that play towards the end of the game, if he makes that catch. It wasn't a drop. It was a great defensive play. The defender got his hand in there and poked it free. But he gave everything he had on it. And I said this before. I'm not saying that Mark Andrews is gone here by any stretch, but what you're seeing from Likely makes it a little easier to eventually let him go, in my mind.
Yeah, I agree. Mark Andrews looked great this summer coming back from the injury. It really wasn't any kind of notion that he had lost a step or anything. He still was Lamar's favorite target in practice, I would say. It's a little bit strange in terms of Likely, but the Lamar switched to him like that in the second half when he didn't have Andrews, but he also switched to him like as the Chiefs when Andrews was covered. You know, when they tried to take away, erase Andrews from the selection of choices for Lamar, Lamar had an answer for it. Just go to Likely. And they drove him right up the field a couple of different times on that. And, you know, that was certainly special. I think there is a pretty good chance this is Andrews' last year in Baltimore. It's unfortunate, but they have a big cap savings next year from cutting him. And they've got to find cap in various ways in order to accommodate the ballooning of the Lamar contract as the years play out here. And unfortunately, it's not going to be easy. They're going to have some very tough cuts to make.
This is why I go back to last year and how important it was to win last year. I'm not one of those guys that said the window's shutting. With Lamar, right, the window stays open. But you, statistically, in my mind, I keep saying this, you had one of the best teams I've seen in the past 30 years, and you didn't win the AFC Championship against, I thought the Chiefs were an inferior opponent. But I didn't think they were even close, to be honest. But, Pat Mahomes pulls some magic out of his hat every once in a while and shows up. But this was something, too, where just looking at it, you're going to have to make some hard cuts. I've been a big believer it's better to get rid of somebody too soon rather than too late. And I'd hate to see Mark Andrews go, but it would have been great to get that Super Bowl win last year and have that under your belt. And it makes some of these decisions a little bit easier knowing that you got that one.
Yeah. And like we discussed in the first show, the Ravens are still the favorite to win the AFC North. It's not off the table this year that they could win it, but they don't have the same roster they had last year. The roster is not as good. And primarily that difference is on the offensive line. And it's a sad situation, but losing Zeitler and Moses and replacing them with who they did is just going to put a big dent in the offense for any team.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's see. I want to talk about something. I guess I'm still a little bit frustrated. Let me go to an offbeat player, Deontay Hardy. Okay. Now I know we got him as a return man, and part of that was you need two return men on kickoffs. They wanted a new guy on punts, et cetera, et cetera. It's not like he had a pretty good punt return in the game against the Raiders. He hasn't really been a factor in terms of returning kickoffs so far. But more importantly, he played four snaps, I think, in the first week. Might have been five, but that's the range against the Chiefs. And he had one snap in week two. What I'm frustrated by is you have a guy who could take some of the gadget load away from Zay Flowers, and they're really not going there with it.
Yeah. Is it something you want to see more of?
I'd like to reduce Flowers' role as a gadget player, getting him running down the field, because I think he does you more good dragging a safety with him and opening up the field.
Well, and the other thing, like, look, we all love seeing the ball in Zay Flowers' hands because he's electric, right? But he is a smaller guy, and those hits add up. The more and more you're throwing in the middle and underneath, the likelihood of him getting out of bounds or getting down, I think, goes down in percentages. And coming across the middle, we've seen it. That can be a death sentence for some of these wide receivers. Now, they've tried to protect him a little bit more with the rule enforcement they have. But I agree with you. Like, if you have a guy with that skill set, and I just go back to, like, the Packers this week. They got to start Malik Willis, right? Jordan Love's hurt. So what do? They have all these designed runs for their wide receivers, for their running back, for their quarterback, and just kept throwing everything at the Colts. And to me, that's like forward thinking. And I agree with you. Like, I never thought about Hardy being more of the gadget guy on this offense, but why not? This is what he's done, and he definitely has that skill set.
Yeah, they'll get keep Mitchell back. They'll have lots of options for using him. I mean, boy, do I freaking love the notion of having a pony backfield, which probably means Mitchell would be lined up on the as a flanker somewhere. Mm-hmm. But a pony backfield, two running backs with him and Henry, and then also Lamar. That's an unbelievable misdirection brew that could really pay off for the Ravens.
Absolutely. And, you know, like, again, just going back to what you're talking about, we didn't talk about Zay as much. We were mainly focusing on Hardy. But for me, I think you have something special in Zay. But again, like, if Zay was on the Chiefs, and I hate using this as an example because the Chiefs are a bit of an anomaly, I feel like I was really interested to see how the Chiefs are going to use Hollywood Brown. Now we'll never know. But, you know,
is he out for the season now?
He's out for the season. Yep.
What happened?
Whatever that injury he had was worse than they thought, and they thought they could get through it with some basic stuff, and now he needs surgery to fix it. So, yeah, he's done for the year, and I just saw Isaiah Pacheco got hurt too, so they're going to be trotting out a fullback as their starting back or picking up Kareem Hunt if that happens this week. But all that aside, like, you have a guy in Zay that I think you can use in so many different ways, and I feel like you're missing the boat with that top-end speed and getting him down the field or – setting him up on a wheel or some sort of double move. I don't know if you have time for it, but a double move and setting something up. There's just so many different things you can do with them. And I feel like they're doing the easy stuff with him.
Right. I mean, they've done a little bit of getting him in the deep zone between level two and level three, but you always face his own defense as the Ravens, because everybody needs to keep eyes on Lamar Jackson. And that's always a priority. So you face a very heavy, predominantly zone group. Well, what that means is that you have space on the field to work back against that zone and some predictability in terms of where you can be to get open. It's good for Lamar. Zay, who's not a great route runner, but a very sudden athlete, it's great for him. He's a great receiver against zone coverage. And it should be something that they're looking to exploit that advantage. It's kind of like what we talked about in the first thing, the play action advantage. They just have not taken advantage of it all so far. And, you know, it is... While I'm not really in favor of the head coach basically stifling the choices of either coordinator, this is a case where I think Harbaugh needs to get in there and say, look, we need to see more play action. It needs to be part of our DNA. It's part of what's holding us back. And we're just not getting the plays open we need. And I also need you to see Steve use the tight ends more often. He's on the headset. They're having the discussion.
Go ahead. I think he spoke on it today, actually, in saying that they need to run more play action. After watching, I don't know how much, if any, you've got to see the Saints against the Cowboys. Everybody's, you know, talking about Clint Kubiak and what a genius he is now as the offensive coordinator for the Saints. But, you know, you saw some things that they did in that game where it's almost like, yeah, I want to steal that. They had big plays down the field. I know Kamara went off, but I've said this for years about that Saints team. Everything's predicated on the run. They do a lot of play action. Carr looks great. And I think that the Ravens could take some things that they saw this past week against the Cowboys, especially how they handled Michael Parsons, and try to do some similar things.
Mm-hmm. Did they, in terms of Michael Parsons, was it primarily ball out quick? Was it a lot of chips?
A lot of chips and making sure somebody was – it was almost like he was getting hit from different angles. Like, he'd get hit and he'd turn and boom, somebody else was on him. And he talked about it, that they did a really good job against him and he's got to work better to make something happen. So I think you're going to get a pretty inspired Micah Parsons, which is a scary thing, because that guy doesn't look it, but man, he's strong as an ox.
Yeah, well, that is a little scary. All right, I think I'm about ready to tap out on this. And I'm noticing, I think we had the only offensive question I believe we got to in the mailbag the other day. So I'm not going to do that anymore. So why don't I just ask you again, what do you have going on currently, and where would people talk football online with you?
Yeah. So, I mean, look, you can get me on Twitter at JCon Sports. It's interesting. I had to change my Twitter handle so I could do other things because it had 105.7 in it. And I'm like, I put 105.7 in it even before this was even made. But now I go on there and chat with people. I try to answer every message. I've got my own website, concretelocks.com, where I sell picks, and it's $20 for a month, and you get pretty much everything under that. And I'm constantly, like, I ran a survivor pool where somebody's going to win like 500 in cash. I'm constantly giving out prizes and free months and things like that. I really like doing this. And even, you know, the hard part is when you have those losing days, you got to show up the next day, which is one of the things I love and hate about this, because you dread it. But again, like, taking ownership over good or bad picks is what people should be doing. And I do a lot of things that, because I'm on a Telegram channel and you get to see my write-up. I had one handicapper tell me, Ken, hey, don't ever do a write-up. Don't tell them what you think, because
they'll use it against you.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so if I pick the, the Packers to win this weekend because I think whatever, you know, and then they win because of something stupid that I didn't predict, it's like, well, you didn't call that. You know, geniuses pick green, Greg, but you didn't pick the car, you know? So, by the way, that's a little meet the parents, sorry. But no, like, I love, like, getting into this stuff and letting people see how my mind works. And I feel like baseball is actually my best sport, and it's weird to say that, but I've really developed kind of a niche for that and understanding which way I want to go. But I love betting on football, man. There's nothing like sitting down and watching a full NFL slate, and even a college slate for that matter.
Well, I always really appreciate talking gambling with you. It's my background as well. But what I like about Jeremy is the contrarian style he usually brings to it, because he's usually approaching a problem, or often in times of our discussion, approaching a problem from where is the rest of the gambling public missing? What are they going to overreact to? And how do you take the other side of that?
So Ken, that's how my mind works. And I've actually started using it in like everyday life, where you look at certain things like, okay, I got in a fight with my wife. What was she seeing? How did she see this argument, how it went down? And then I'm analyzing it. But, like, you know, finding out where public money's coming in, where sharp money's going, looking at things that people don't. The first thing I do is, like, this weekend against the Raiders. I was on the Raiders. I didn't think they'd win. But I'm sitting here trying to think of all the different ways they could keep the game close. And I felt like I found too many. And that's one of the reasons why I ended up being on the Raiders plus the points. It did help that everybody else was betting the Ravens. But that was one of the winners I had this weekend, along with like the Packers and some other games where people were like, oh, Packers got Malik Willis. Malik Willis going into the game this past weekend, if you're a numbers guy, you'll love this. If he had taken the ball and spiked it every single snap that he ever had in the NFL, he would have had a higher quarterback rating than what he had coming into the game against the Packers.
He was under 39.6.
Yeah, so you get it. And like, people are looking at it, it's like, oh my God, he can't throw. Well, the Colts can't stop the run. Why was nobody talking about this? I was screaming about Josh Jacobs this weekend. Play him. And he had a 20-yard touchdown call back, but he ended up with like 150 yards. So, I try to look at games a little bit differently than people. That's why some people go, ooh, you're betting on them? Yeah. But it's part of the business, man.
How are you feeling about the game coming up in Dallas?
I mean, I'm seeing a lot of money coming on the Ravens because everybody just – they're so down on Dallas with how they lost. I don't know what to think about Dallas because – I've been saying all year long, I like Cleveland week one against them. I like the Saints against them this past weekend. But when I looked at the game, I'm going, they're one-dimensional. They cannot run the football at all. Even Dak now is not a runner the way he used to be with all the ankle injuries he's had. But it's scary when you make that team one-dimensional because they got one of the best weapons in the game in CeeDee Lamb. I'm interested to see how the Ravens match up with him and if he's bracketed the whole game.
Yeah, they're going to have to figure that out, and that will be something. We'll hit that up on the matchup show later in the week. But, Jeremy, really appreciate having you on and taking the time. Other folks out there, if you want to do a favor for the show, hit us up with a like and a subscribe if you're watching on YouTube. Introduce somebody else to the program. You got an older parent, you make a trip to a nursing home or whatever, and there's a guy in the hall who wants to hear about good Ravens content. Just show them how to get the Film Study Baltimore and play the pod directly off their PC, so they don't have to go and figure out how to do podcasts, which you'll never get them to do.
There's a market that you're missing, Ken. I mean, we just got to get people to get out on Saturdays and Sundays and knock on the door and say, hey, we want to talk to you about our Lord and Savior and Ken McCusick's podcast. You know,
there you go. Anyway, 50-word review on your favorite podcast platform also helps a lot. Thanks, everybody, for listening again. Jeremy, thanks again for coming on.
Anytime, man. I appreciate it.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and Watch or Tap, also on them.
Service plan required for Watch or Tap. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.